Hello, Cancer, and welcome to your Somewhere in Between reading. My name is Eric Francis Coppolino, your astrologer for the next hour or so. Here with a second look at your 2024 plus solar chart. In the written section, I did a bunch of different analysis of chart events and how I think they may play out. We looked at a little bit of history of Pluto and Capricorn. I'm going to recap some of that as well. We will also include on your page the Capricorn studio reading to Cancer. It applies to your opposite sign, but your opposite sign has a lot to say about what's going on with you, particularly with Pluto and Saturn having been there so recently and now just kind of wrapping up their Pluto in particular, wrapping up its journey across Capricorn. And we are in the last days of what will be all but a little graze, a little encore of Pluto and Capricorn in Northern Hemisphere autumn between September and November, November 19th, around September 10th or something, and November 19th, notably, the election of 2024 will take place with Pluto in Capricorn. It seems to be making that little last visit in there just to do that. I'm working in the astrology chalet. My lighting conditions are, they seem to be a lot better than they were this morning on the Taurus reading, where I had to keep moving. So if you watch that one, hopefully not too distracting. The light seems to be good. I'm not a great lover of video, owing to all of the complexities involved. So. The cameras all have their limitations, the light seems to be good, combination artificial and natural, and I'm going to do my best here to be undistracted by the technology environment. I will reach forward periodically to turn my monitor back on because it goes into power saving mode, even though I'm connected to wall current, so that's what that is. I'm so good at it. I can do it without interrupting a sentence. To begin with, to have lived through Pluto through your opposite sign is an important achievement. This has not been easy. Whether you have Cancer Sun or Cancer Rising, it has presented special challenges to you. And those challenges have really included being pushed to the limits on a number of different occasions. There have been some peak moments of that. The peak moments of Pluto and Capricorn really were the 2011-2012 era. Then the approximately 2018-2019, as other planets were changing signs, a little bit less directly to do with Pluto, but still. And then early 2020, when Pluto made its conjunction, Saturn made a conjunction to Pluto in your opposite sign, Capricorn. These are all life-changing transits. Some of them are wrenching transits. There is no doubt in my mind that you have been through some very challenging experiences under the influence of Pluto in Capricorn, because you have all of that Plutonian force coming right at you. You're looking right at it, and so it is a direct encounter. There's really very little between you and it, and this is almost over. I'm recording on Wednesday. I'm not sure what the date is, but it's Wednesday. And after the 13th, 14th, 15th, right around there, so something in the teens, so I'm not really obviously paying attention to that. Pluto enters Capricorn on the 20th. I believe that's on Saturday or something like that. It's coming right up. And so this past week, I have noticed, in fact, this whole past month with Pluto working the last degree of Capricorn has been very trying on people. It has got many people out to the end of their patience, the end of their tether. the end of their ability to handle certain challenges, kind of very psychologically stressful, spiritually stressful, and there seems to be little we can do about it. We are in the midst of a major change of eras. It is not always possible to say when eras begin and when they end. I was in my car, the radio came on, mysteriously as it does when I start the car, and somebody was saying, well, this actress died at age 103, and that marks the end of the classical era of television. Well, that's not really true. There's probably a lot more of them, but whatever. But when Pluto changes signs, we move into a different world. The ground shifts beneath us. And the transition of Pluto from Capricorn into Aquarius is the transition of the world from the physical world to the digital world. Pluto in Capricorn has prepared the ground for this, mainly by doing a real number on all that which is physical, all that which is brick and mortar, all that which is structured and requires some substance to hold it up other than cloud storage. And so we are rapidly entering the era when basically everything except people, dogs, cats, birds, and horses is going to be cloud storage, and the whole scenario is doing a number on all of us, making us into essentially digitized devices. So the Pluto in Capricorn era has brought many things to a close for you. It has it has shifted a major element of your orientation on reality and has compelled you to test what is real and what is not real. And this has been one of the most poignant questions that you have had to address during the past 15 years of Pluto in Capricorn. And that really has a lot to say about relationships. The question has focused largely on relationships, and it is fair to say that there has never been a time of more profound change. Though for anyone born under Cancer and Cancer rising, the planets one by one have blown through Capricorn over approximately the past 30 years or longer, with a massive peak in 1993, which brought things to a head once again, and it has not been an easy lifetime for you in terms of your relationships, because there has been so much influence from the gods of change. And it's almost as if every time one of these planets moves through Capricorn, that is to say your opposite location, your opposite sign, opposite house, opposite place, looking a little like this, that's Cancer, that's Capricorn. So anything that makes that exact opposition is a seventh house feeling, and that's relational, and it's also environmental. It talks about the environment in which you live and in which you directly experience day-to-day life, walking around, who you meet on the street. And then more specifically, the seventh house addresses partners of all kinds, marital partners, business partners, dance partners, and then also open enemies. So with that combination of things, it has been a very challenging time. And my overall assessment of this next major transit, most recently Pluto in Capricorn, is that there has never been a more pronounced difference between what your concept of relationships was in 2008, what your desires, your needs, and expectations were in 2008, and what they are today. Every last facet of what you might expect of someone or predict of someone, need of someone, has been challenged. And the particular issue for Cancer is that you tend to rely heavily on the structures of society to sustain your relationships. There are elements of tradition, of concepts of dignity, of respect for family structure, respect for legal structure. You need to have that to have your life be stable in some way. And that's owing to the fact that Capricorn in your relationship house, which the first and seventh houses signs work in an integrative way, where our mission on Earth is to integrate the experiences of the other, the opposite sign of the other, into our own, and find a kind of internal wholeness. So it's less about opposite. All astrologers call it opposite because it's first to seventh setup. I'm not even sure that you can make that out. Let's not have to move too quickly. The pencil indicates houses 1 and 7. That's house 1. That's house 7. Capricorn. And so the spiritual journey as described by astrology is very often about the integration of the opposite signs. You've had a hell of a lot to integrate. And all of those things that you were pretty sure you could count on as a young person, these elements of tradition and of structure and of trustworthiness, of an enduring quality, of the nature of promises and commitments, have all largely crumbled in your lifetime. And this is, I think, in many ways left you wondering what exactly it is that you can count on. And ultimately, at the end of the day, the only thing you can count on is yourself. And this is a sad realization for people who previously put so much emphasis on relationships as a learning method and a way to structure a family, a way to structure society, a way to think about yourself in the context of another. But Pluto, in particular, has thrown you back on yourself over and over again, and now that phase of your life is coming to an end. And so, because the transit of Pluto has been so poignant, and it's been so, at times, overpowering, it's important to have a review, I think, of where you started, where you are now, and how you got there, and to break down those individual changes. To that end, I'm going to put Astrology Studio for Capricorn onto the Cancer page. If for some reason it does not make it there, please remind us and we'll get it there. I mean these promises when I make them, but you should see the amount of paper I'm dealing with. And I'm, I sometimes take notes on a to-do list and then I can't freaking find the list. So you want to do a review of this. There's another side to Pluto transits, and the side to Pluto transits is that they compel us to make changes that we know we needed to make. And when that is over, we can really miss having that constant drive, that initiative, that movement forward, that daily waking up and responding to necessity. And when that necessity is gone, well, there can be a loss. It may not be postpartum depression, but you will need in those ways to be more self-motivated than you may have had to have been under the conditions of Pluto in Capricorn. Now Pluto's moving on to Aquarius. This is an unusual transit, and I'm not fully knowing what it is about in the context of the eighth house. The eighth house is the house of the contract associated with the seventh. It is the house of the money associated with the seven. It's the second of the seventh. The second of anything is the financial element of that house. So, for example, the 10th is about career. The second of the 10th is the 11th. The 11th is the money coming in from career. By the way, fortunately, both 10th and 11th aspected very, very powerfully, and I think favorably for you. We're going to get there. I'm going to work our way up, I think, around the wheel to the from the place where you are the most impacted by the external world to the place where you start to get control and take over the take over the movie, take over directorship, take over the process. All right. The eighth house is the house of the affairs of the dead. It's also the house of marital property. And you have Aquarius there. I would like to interview 20 or 30 people with Cancer, Sun, and Rising and make a more thorough delineation of Aquarius on the eighth place, but there's a lot of people involved. And the eighth is a very complicated house. And if you're wondering why some of the parts of your life are so complicated, and why there seem to be so many people with whom you have these unusual contractual bonds, that's a bit about having Pluto on the eighth, Aquarius on the eighth house. Now, with Pluto coming, you are going to want to simplify your life. Generally, I think that will mean fewer agreements, fewer contracts. Almost everyone has gone the way of fewer to one to zero lovers. This is a facet of life that is already under a very strong reduction influence because of the incredible complication of this house and the complexities that different people bring in. But you want to be very careful whose problems you allow yourself to take on with Pluto in the eighth house. There will be a lot of opportunities to sever ties with Pluto in the eighth house, and it is calling for an impeccable quality in the people whom you do let into your life. And when you discover that there may not be an impeccable quality, that is the time to simplify the relationship, back down, back off, and maybe cut the relationship off sooner rather than later, because the problem here is that power can ascribe, as you learned with Pluto in the seventh, power can ascribe to Pluto in the eighth, and you have to contend with that power. And so, as you have to do with Pluto in the seventh, there's going to be a lot of rising to the occasion of Pluto in the eighth and finding the internal strength, summoning your psychic and intellectual abilities such that you can address what it is that comes your way. You're not a neophyte to this. You've been through a lot of eighth house transits. Most recently, Saturn through the eighth house. Jupiter was there too, but Saturn through the eighth house from about the spring of 2020 till about the spring of 2023. That was not easy for anyone. That was the lockdown phase. You will learn a lot from how you responded to the lockdown phase of society. Remember, I feel like I've got to remind people, like the tarot card reader in the book 100 Years of Solitude, who ceases to tell people's future, and she does tarot card readings about their past. And that happens to be my astrology style, as I look more at the past and do a kind of reevaluation counseling. But it struck me as extremely funny in Gabriel Garcia Marquez's book that people would go to the tarot card reader to find out what had previously happened. But you need to know what previously happened. And one of the times to know what previously happened was the lockdown phase. And what this tarot card reader is going to tell you, that in March of 2020, the world economy shut down based on a diversity of claims of a health threat. More money than ever has changed hands in the course of a few months in early 2020. What did you do? Where were you? How were you? How did you situate yourself for that? How did you respond to that? What were your beliefs around that time? And the most important question with Aquarius on the eighth house is, to what extent were you subject to the values and the principles of others rather than subject to your own values and principles? This is one of the most important questions we can be asking ourselves. Any of us could be asking ourselves with Pluto entering Aquarius, because we're entering a time of the complete redefinition, rethinking, restructuring, and reorganization of the power of groups. And the groups are very important, and we are now living in a time of almost total tribal conditions. The condition of total digital conditions really means total tribal conditions, because electricity and digital are all tribalizing. They create what Grandpa McLuhan called the global village. Villages tend to be mean places. They're not very friendly, and that which is tribal is almost never friendly to that which is individual in any sense. Tribes do not brook individuals. The individuals may include the chief, the chief's daughter or son, the shaman. Those are your individuals in a tribe. Everyone else is just another member of the tribe. Oh, bravest warrior, okay, fine. But for the most part, tribes do not tolerate individuality. And you have the sign of tribes, Aquarius, on the eighth place, where so much is transacted, so much is wheeled and dealed in the eighth house of the world. And it is a very complex place because of all the different permutations involved and the involvement of things like probate courts and all of this crisis around death that is never dealt with. Bodies often just kind of like stuffed in the basement and forgotten about, and issues put up in the attic and forgotten about. Pluto's going to stir the pot on all of that, and where it's going to stir the pot on all of that for you is the eighth house. So it is a place of a time of reckoning with some of the most fundamental bottom lines of life. That is the nature of the eighth house. Okay. Ninth place. Handy that you have Pisces there. The ninth is the house that is the inherent house of spirituality. It is the place where we seek a conscious connection with God in some form. The form God takes may be your higher power. It may be what you think of as your higher self. It may be what you think of as yourself. It may be light streaming down from the clouds. It may be Jesus Christ with a shepherd's crook. It may be the Holy Spirit or Shekinah, the light of the inner light burning within you, as the Quakers call it. But the ninth is where we seek that light, that connection to the divine beyond ourselves. It's also the house of worldly, global adventures, long distance travel, the making of journeys to sacred sites. Those are called theorias. And you have Pisces there. And Pisces offers a direct connection. Pisces does not require a minister to get involved. Pisces does not require you to sign any form of a contract or give your money away to a cult leader. Pisces does not require you to do anything really to find God except be with the beauty of nature and the beauty of creativity. Music, for example, is most likely a place that you you experience a feeling that you experience as a kind of divine communion, a kind of worldly perfection that has the touch of the master's hand on it. And Pisces is also an energy that is easily corrupted. It is soft. It is absorbent. It is the river delta into which all the other signs flow. It's one of the reasons why it has such a broad perspective, or it can. But it is easily corrupted by drink, by drugs, by any form of madness or psychosis. And it is important for you to keep those waters of Pisces clean and to maintain an uncorrupted spiritual connection through yourself to the numinous, through the indescribable, that which cannot really be quantified, that which is overwhelmingly anything beautiful, large, creative, or exists in some kind of potential. And what you've had going on there for about 11 years, 12, well, how long, 2011, 2012, 12, 13 years is Neptune has been there, greatly enhancing the effect of the Pisces factor there. And this may have made it difficult for you to home in on something that you can describe, something that you can, that you feel as if you can count on. Neptune enhances the presence of power and power of Pisces as if there has been this balloon growing in the ninth house, this bubble growing in the ninth house for you. And it has created distortions. And the distortions are now finally finding their answer that Saturn has arrived in Pisces. That was in the spring of 2023. And so it's been there for under 1 year, and it is about to have one of its peak, well, two of its peak moments are in 2024 of Saturn in Pisces. And by peak moments, I mean the moment when a planet makes a major aspect to Saturn, or the moment when Saturn makes a major aspect to a planet. We'll get to what those are about. What Saturn has entering Pisces is offering you is a spirituality that is more based on the reality principle than on the fantasy principle. A lot of spirituality is fantasy. A lot of spirituality is like the Jehovah's Witness books where the white family is surrounded by zebras and goats and maybe a dinosaur and there are dangerous birds eating from people's hands. I'm sure you've seen that Jehovah's Witness image. A lot of spirituality is the fantasy woven by various gurus. A lot of it is based on idealism. And that may have been the case with Neptune in Pisces, to some degree, greater or lesser. Whatever the case may have been, Saturn has now arrived in that house and is doing its usual cleanup act, tidy up the edges, let's get this together, let's pull focus on these issues. And this should come as relief. This should be helpful. This, I think, will help you define the terms of your own relationship to your spiritual path. It will, Saturn almost has a concretizing effect, the effect of making you want to structure your ideas and your beliefs a little bit more than having them kind of be floating around and undescribed. The structuring may come in the form of writing about them. It may come in the form of more structured practice, more structured reading and study, and I think inevitably making a couple of very important journeys somewhere in the world in support of your spiritual evolution. My suggestion for all forms of spiritual travel is to not go with a group and not go with another person. When you are called on a spiritual mission, when you are called on a theoria, as Robert Hunter wrote, that path is for your steps alone, and you do not want to have to be consulting with people, or anyone for that matter, if you're in Athens one day and you understand that it's time to go to Delos the next day, and you're going to scrap all your plans and blow the hotel off and move on. So the idea of travel, that's not very Saturn in the ninth, but to me it is, because travel is a concrete form of spiritual exploration. It is a physical thing. You stand in a place and you look and you say, what is this place? Where am I? What has happened here before? And you ask yourself, what am I to do here? And then you learn. And it is something that happens in space and time. That is the specialty of Saturn. Things that happen in documented places in space and time. Saturn will continue to pursue Neptune. You can see here, I'm so glad the light is better. Saturn will continue to, I'm so sorry for the readings where there was trouble with the light. I owe you one. Saturn will continue, where are we here? So Saturn is moving this away. Saturn is moving toward Neptune. Let's see if I can get this here. Saturn is here. And if you look on the other more sophisticated chart, it has a lower number than Neptune. Neptune's at the very end of Pisces. By the way, Neptune comes out to the 30th degree of Pisces this year. That kind of took me by surprise. Wow, the Neptune in Pisces year is ending. So for as long as Neptune is influencing your spiritual path, Saturn will be there to provide boundaries. The time of unbridled belief is over. And so now you will have guidance, you will have structure to call upon, to depend upon. And Saturn always counsels old things, counsels looking not to revere the ways of the past unduly or unnecessarily, but to at least know the way things were done in the past, to know what the earlier tradition is. The ninth is a very important place of completion for the tenth, and there's a lot going on in your tenth, which is Aries. One thing to know about the conjunction of Saturn and Neptune is that it is going to happen soon, but it is not going to happen in Pisces. It's going to happen in the first degree of Aries on your solar midheaven. This is very significant, and it comports with many other factors of your astrology in 2024, which is that you are on the ascendancy. You are becoming better known for who you are and what you do, and there is something very important about the actions that you take this year. And the actions that we take in the 10th, which for you is Aries, a very action-oriented sign on your occupying your house of taking action. You have an initiative on the sign, the house of taking action, right? Sign is Aries, the house is the 10th. Aries is action-oriented. The 10th is action-oriented. It is the very house of action, in Greek known as praxis. It is not merely the house of reputation and what you're known for and what you think you want to be known for, but it is the house of doing what you must, doing doing the thing to do. And as often is the case with Aries there, the thing to do is something that has not been done before or has not been done any time lately, not been done by anybody you know, or is being done in a new context. So there's very little that's new in the world, but when there's action taken involving Aries, and we'll in the next sentence elucidate the point of Chiron and why 2024 is such an important time of action. And because 2024 is such an important time of action, why the spiritual tending of the ninth is so important. There's one last factor of the ninth, and I'm doing a section on this in every one of these video readings, and I did it in many of the written readings, and that is the conjunction of Saturn and Nessus. And this doesn't tell you very much, and you have this chart. There is Nessus. Its glyph is similar to Chiron, and that is Saturn. Nessus has been in Pisces since about 2014. I have that ephemeris on the coffee table, but around 2014. And the message of Nessus is taking responsibility for your actions and your choices. That is the essence of freedom, to be able to make a decision and get the benefits and the consequences in whatever form they make. And there certainly are times when it seems like people make decisions for us, they act on us in some way, and then how you respond becomes the action that you take that's associated with whether and how this works out for you. And Nessus has the key phrase, "the buck stops here," as ascribed to it by Melanie Reinhardt. And this is not that hard to see based on an understanding of the myth, because the myth is the story of the actions of Heracles coming back to him, not just one way, but many different ways. And his actions have effects on other people. Those other people act on him in various ways. And so the consistent theme of Nessus, no matter how you look at it, always ends up coming back to the buck stops with you. And that means that it's important to not blame others for the choices that you make. Now, we live in a time when it's not only fashionable, but endorsed and expected that people will blame others for the choices that they personally make for themselves. And somehow this is considered cool. And somehow you can be considered a victim of someone else based on a decision that you made. This is an idea and a seeming reality in the world in which we live that must be reckoned with. There is no way that we are going to in any way live our karma honestly by blaming other people for the decisions that we make. And because digital conditions are so much about projection, this seems to be perfectly normal. It fits in perfectly. You? What you is there to make a decision even? Who even cares what decisions you make? Everything is about the world acting on you. But it's not. It only seems that way. People only want it to be that way and have been conditioned to think that that's the way things are. And that it's not good for anyone. So Saturn makes a conjunction to Nessus in July. It comes within 1 degree, but does not complete the conjunction. But 1 degree is very close. It is what's called partile, so it counts as a conjunction, or what is sometimes called a near miss, but it's very, very near. And this brings up a fundamental spiritual issue of victimization. If you want the best writing about victimization, go to any Course in Miracles, Course in Miracles server. There's several of them. I think acim.org, I consider that the best one, the official one from the Foundation for Inner Peace, the original publisher. Type in the word victim, and you'll get an eyeful about the spirituality of and healing of victimhood. And I would suggest making this a spiritual project this year. Pisces has enough of that. Neptune has enough of that. It's not easy because there is so much seeming victimhood inherent in Pisces and Neptune, but Nessus is calling the question. It's not that Nessus is creating these situations. It's that Nessus is symbolic of situations where you have to grapple with and confront the issues and get to the bottom of things. So, study those Course in Miracles lessons. I am not the victim of the world I see. Learn that logic. The reason you're not the victim of the world you see is because you contain the healing power to resolve those very situations, that very crisis. You contain the healing power to do that. And because all of this is going on in the ninth house, it will be especially responsive to spiritual approaches like asking for help, forgiving. The key to forgiveness of others is you don't do it yourself. You ask for help from spiritual agency. The human ego is not capable of forgiving. The human ego is in itself a condemnation machine. And therefore, the healing medicine is not going to come from the ego. The healing medicine is going to come from the inner light, Shekinah, the Holy Spirit, the indwelling. Okay. Next house. Having some understanding of the spiritual necessities of the ninth, let's go to the tenth. The 10th is where you take action. The 10th is the house of praxis. I love this word. There's a bullshit debate in psychological astrology of what the 10th house is about. And my impression of the 10th house has always been about commanding your power. The 10th is about being your own authority. It describes all manner of relationships with authority, and ultimately it is where you take authority for your own life and your own affairs. You happen to have Aries placed on this house. Aries in any chart, and I think this is would bear out in a solar chart as well as in a a proper natal chart, a place where you will seek self-actualization. Aries is the sign that says I am wherever that sign falls in your chart, and it happens to fall for you in the 10th, in the house of praxis, action, and being known for what you do, and for being the master of your own affairs. And this is one reason why I think the notion of a Cancerian person as a homebody is a misguided perception. It is true that Cancers need a strong home base. It is true that that Cancers need their home to accommodate their brood, and their home to accommodate their life, and to be safe and to be secure, and all of those things, and to be accommodating of their relationships and all of that. But that's the foundation. That is the point of grounding. The need for self-actualization in Cancer is often expressed through work and in the world. And I haven't read a lot of sun sign descriptions any time lately, but whenever I write them, which I do in every year's annual edition, I emphasize the point of how important work is to the sign Cancer. It's also very important to the sign Scorpio. Scorpio has a very similar thing where it's just necessary to get the job done. And there's many people who have a real work ethic. And work ethic itself is coming under attack. Oh, the five biggest regrets are I work too hard. Well, I'm sure there's a lot of people among whose five regrets are I wish I'd done something relevant. And when you that they judged as relevant instead of, you know, working in a chicken factory or whatever, is selling insurance all their life. If they don't really think that was productive for the world, I could see that being a profound regret that that many people have. The thing is, when you do something that is productive, when you do something that is helpful to the world, when you do something that engages your commitment, because nothing is ever accomplished without your commitment, it takes time, it takes energy, it takes willingness to succeed, it takes willingness to fail, it takes total devotion. But in your case, this is not total devotion to something exterior to yourself. It's total devotion to the actions that you take. It is devotion for the purpose of taking action in the world, which is in itself directly related to your self-actualization process. And this is a big year for that. Now, there's been a lot of this going on for you since Chiron entered Aries in 2018, 2019. It took about 9-10 months to filter in from Pisces to Aries. So whatever was going on in the 2018-2019 era is going to provide you a lot of information about the value of the actions that you take and the way in which you may or may not take responsibility for those actions. Now, Chiron in Aries is not exactly new news. Chiron in Aries has been around since again, 2018, 2019, but it is coming to a major peak in 2024 because of a total solar eclipse conjunct Chiron. The total solar eclipse is basically the first of two culminations of Chiron in Aries. And in the style of Chiron, it's always a bit of a late bloomer. There's always a long delay before there is fruition. There's a long delay before action is taken. Other planets work expediently. But Chiron tends to invest a lot of time in preparation and a lot of time in gaining experience and all of that has been going on. In April, on the eighth day, there will be a total solar eclipse conjunct Chiron in Aries. My chart has gone missing. It's the chart connected to the Aries reading. It's this chart, my hand annotated computer printout chart. So I make these charts and then I fill in all the details. And I have no idea where it went. It was here doing just fine for lots of different sessions, and now it is evaporated. But this is an event with Chiron making an exact conjunction. Well, the Moon and the Sun making an exact conjunction to one another, which in turn make an exact conjunction to Chiron. This is so unusual that I consider it to be something actually impossible happening. And that may be its astrological signature, that the impossible happens. And I would therefore aim your intentions at something that you really want to do that you consider to be impossible or very nearly so. And this will also include part of your healing process. It may be central, integral to your healing process. And it does not necessarily have to be related to your career and profession, though there is likely to be some major important development in your career and profession around that time. But it's not necessarily about that. But it may be. It may be related to it. It may be somehow expressive of or lead to something that shifts your life path in such a way that you take on a new commitment and a new kind of commitment and a new kind of action. And where Chiron is involved, there is almost always the spirit of dissent. There is the spirit of being a maverick. And this is not dissent for its own purposes. It is dissent because that's the necessary element of what must be done. That maverick quality is not just to be cool or to seem brave. or to be a hero in some way. It is essential and necessary. There. Now, Aries has been the scene of what I consider to be the one of the two digital crime scenes. Crime scene one has been the imposition of the network on us. That's Aquarius. But the impact of the network, and whatever network that is, I take the story of the network back to the telegraph, but finding its most proximate pin in the map in the telephone, which blew privacy out of the water owing to the party line, the telephone operator, and then every word you said was subject to being transformed into instantaneous gossip owing to the telephone operator. Number, please. That thing. And then the party line where five households shared a telephone number, and you could pick up and listen to anybody, and you knew their most important business. So this problem with privacy has existed a long time. I watched recently. I took a long break from South Park, but then I decided I couldn't go back. There's that episode where Cartman is always walking around on his phone, gabbing. He's got his phone in speakerphone mode, and he's talking about how the NSA is always spying on us, and he's always going to have a protest, but then the NSA is going to hear about it. But he's shouting into his phone, and all of his friends can hear, and Kyle wants to pound him into the ground. And then he gets a job for the NSA to spy on the NSA. This is not new. This goes back to the days of the phone operator. Just saying. And now we live in a time when this has been ramped up through the fucking roof. And so if crime scene one, Aquarius, your eighth, where the network was imposed, and by the way, with Pluto and Aquarius in the eighth, you want to jack up all of your financial security. You want to put fortresses around your finances, your personal papers, your office, and make sure you know exactly who has access and why they have access. Need to know basis. The personal crime scene, the impact on the human experience, on consciousness, on the psyche, of course, is in Aries. And this is timed by the movement of Eris through Aries, beginning at the age of radio in 1922. That's when Eris entered Aries for the first time. And Chiron, so this is the result has been this tribalizing quality. Additionally, this loss of inner integration. The loss not only of privacy in practice, but the idea that there is a private space within us that is ours and ours alone, where you can be someone that no one knows about. This idea has gone completely out of existence, where you might think, well, all you have to do is read my Facebook feed or my Instagram and you'll know exactly who I am. Like there's nothing else left to know. There's no more mystery to who you are. Well, I assure you that there is, but you have largely been anesthetized to that, hopefully not entirely so. And Chiron's presence is calling you back to a kind of inner integration and wholeness. It likely will be in the style of action, but the action is driven from an inner place out into the world. At the moment of that eclipse, Mercury is conjunct Eris. This is stunning. I mean, the eclipse conjunct Chiron to the arc minute is hilarious enough. But to add to that, at the same moment, the conjunction of retrograde Mercury to Eris, to within 3 minutes of arc, 1/20th of 1 degree. One little teeny slice of the full moon. The full moon's only half a degree. So you cut that into 15 slabs, and that's how close the conjunction is. Mercury, retrograde, getting information from Eris, finding out about what it is that happened. What is it exactly that changed? What must I do to retrieve my soul in the middle of all of this digital artificial intelligence, generative AI, deep fake, deep stupid, fantasy world, madness, you are getting a personal calling and summoning to the understanding of who you are in this new context. That is my summary of Aries. Now remember, plenty more is coming to Aries. Saturn and Neptune will be making a conjunction in the first degree of Aries. I believe this takes place in 2025 and into 2026. So this is just the beginning of this process of praxis, of learning how to work your ability to take action. Next house. How am I doing here? It's a lot of information. I know. I'm not even working from notes. I've so internalized this. I wonder how I do it. Taurus on the 11th. Let's take a look at that quickly. I'll make a pink circle there. Taurus on the 11th. I don't know if you can see the circle. There's the circle. It's not very dark. That's the 11th. The 11th is the house of your connection to your personal public, meaning your friends and their friends. I think the 11th is being potentially anyone who knows your name or who knows you by reputation. So you don't have to have met people for them to be in your 11th, but usually it's considered the house of groups and organizations, and your friends and the people you might meet at a party and so forth. Taurus there speaks to your traditional approach to relationships. It's similar to having Capricorn on the 7th. You want relationships that last. You want relationships that are designed to endure. You want something traditional. Uranus has been there now for the past 6 years, and it may have been interesting at first. It may have seemed like it was exciting at first to have this Uranian influence. It may have brought new different groups into your life. They may have been helpful. They may have not been helpful. There were obviously some social disruptions, but really what has been for you is a kind of a modernization of your personal traditions, a shakeup of all that you previously held to be true, and a reevaluation of the values that you live by. And now that shakeup is being answered by Jupiter. So I'm talking about instability and shakeup and change that might happen seemingly overnight. And you've experienced a good bit of this over the past few years. Jupiter entered Taurus in 2023. I'm not exactly sure when. I think probably late spring 2023. And presented a kind of a stabilizing influence. But not exactly an activating influence. Jupiter, you know, before anyone even realized it was there, it had gone retrograde and it was kind of operating in a covert way and in an introverted way. But now Jupiter is direct. Uranus is direct. And the next thing that happens, apropos of these two planets, is that they form a conjunction in your 11th house. The 11th is considered by many astrologers, including and especially classical astrologers, to be the best house because it is the most fruitful of the houses. And it is the most fruitful generally, but with Taurus there, that's really pretty fruitful. And with Uranus there, you're in the realm of the unexpected. And with Jupiter there, there is a boon. There is some form of a benefit. And the benefit is likely to be in some way unexpected. There may not be it's unexpected. But it is significant, and it is large in scale, and is both the activity of the 10th in Aries and the 11th in Taurus imply a radical expansion of your affairs into the world, an expansion of your influence, an expansion of your reputation and what you're known for. But thankfully, with all this activity in the 11th place in Taurus, there is something that comes back to you. But in my view, this all hinges on how you handle the affairs of the 9th, Nessus, Saturn, Neptune, Pisces, minimizing victim consciousness, maximizing asking for help, spiritual help, when you need it. Okay, next house. We're up to the 12th. We're working our way around the top hemisphere. I hope I've covered the lower hemisphere in the written. I don't know what I even put in the written reading. It was so many words ago, so many videos ago. You have Gemini on the 12th house. This here, 12th is this zone in the chart here. It's the one right above the horizon, the house of dreams. The house of that which does not make sense in rational terms, that which is logical on its own terms. I call it dream logic. Speaking of dream logic, there's a film that I count as one of about five movies in the history of cinema that have ever actually changed my life. Almost every book I read changes my life in some important way. It shifts my perspective in some important way. It makes me rethink something in an important way. That's the nature of books. The nature of movies is not so much that. They're more for enjoyment and entertainment and, it's got nothing to do. But there are some movies that have impact. And one of the few that's impacted me is called Waking Life by Richard Linklater. Now, I've been talking about this film so long that I'm sure a couple of you have actually kind of clicked on that thing on Amazon or gotten your Netflix copy. But it's about the nature of the lucid dream. It's about the nature of ordinary consciousness. It is about the nature of the mind under the influence of digital conditions. Now, with Gemini on the 12th, there is likely to be a kind of a deep dualism that you have here. Now, this makes sense. When I've thought this through like 150 times, the 12th is inherently dualistic. But to put Gemini there is to coexist with that dualism in a whole different way. It is to, it gives you something to work with. And there's going to be a lot of activity in that 12th house this year. Two big things happen. The first one is that Sedna gets there for the first time in 11,400 years. So in case you were born 11,400 years ago, you're having your Sedna return. I've had a few of those. Nobody knows what this is really about. Because, with a planet like Pluto, mere 248-year orbit, you can go back and look at all the Pluto-Saturn conjunctions. You go to Serenu.com or SolarFire, and you get a list of all the Saturn-Pluto conjunctions for the last 2,000 years, and then you sit in the library, because the shit's not on the internet, and you look up at what's going on in history at every one of those, and you can form some kind of a picture of it. But not with things 11,400 years ago. It just can't be done because nobody wrote it down. There wasn't anybody around. Or they were all like living at the equator on top of mountains. Where I'm sitting was probably under a mile of ice. And if it wasn't under a mile of ice, it was under a rushing river of melting ice. Nothing going on here 11,400 years ago. But we know that's a long cycle. We know that it is, from the standpoint of human life, let's say modern post-hunter-gatherer human life, unprecedented. For those who are wondering what Sedna and Gemini is about, we will be aided and abetted by the ingress of Jupiter into Gemini at the same time, within weeks. So there'll be Sedna will enter Gemini, and then Jupiter will enter Gemini, and then around May 27 or so, they form a conjunction, and Jupiter tends to magnify the effect of things. So we will get a close-up look, brief glimpse, lasting a number of weeks at the most, a close-up look of what this Sedna transit is going to be about. Now, Sedna is going to be in your 12th house until 2066, so you know, better make it comfortable and get used to the fact that Sedna is going to be there. As I go through these readings one after the next, and reinterpret Sedna, my impression is that it is about not letting other people make your decisions for you. Thing one. It is about keeping your heart open in challenging situations, and it's about the environment. Now, Sedna and Taurus, astrologers pretty much agree that that's about the impact of human life on the physical environment of the Earth. Al Gore's Age of Consequences. Sedna gets into Taurus just before the first Earth Day. Now it's exiting Taurus when there's Tesla electric charging stations everywhere, and that's supposed to save the planet. So you could easily do like a history, make a fantastic astrology journal article, a history of environmental thinking under the influence of Sedna and Taurus. But we're really talking about the physical environment of the Earth. With Sedna and Gemini, we're talking about the mental environment. And the mental environment is the environment of thought, of words, of concepts, of ideas, generally what Teilhard de Chardin called the new sphere, N-O-O-S-P-H-E-R-E, the sphere of all data, of all life data, of all chart data, books, libraries, DNA, RNA, bugs, beetles, everything broadcast, everything recorded, the new sphere, the sphere of all that is known. This finds a counterpart in Pluto and Aquarius, because Pluto and Aquarius also is going to impact the mental environment. And so we have a lot of information coming about the mental environment. Very important that we take this under advisement, because you could say, well, the world of resources, that's very important, and the world of human impact on the environment, that's very important. Yes, I agree, all that's very important. But there's no way to perceive that, there's no way to think that through, conceive of that at all, without going through the mental environment first. And the mental environment's going to tell us how to think about these things, how to evaluate them, how to accept and understand what is true. How do we evaluate things? That's all processed through the mental environment. So there's not going to be any solution to any ecological problem, to any problem of resource depletion, or the recreation of new modes of resources without being aware of the mental environment. And the mental environment is the most dominant and the most invisible of the environments. And yet, when you are able to say, ah, there's an environment, it's invisible, no one's really paying attention to it, you know that's where the power is coming from. This is a figured ground issue. It's obvious to see the poor polar bear floating around on an iceberg because the Arctic Sea is melting. But it's more difficult to understand the mental environment from which that emerged. The mental environment that gave rise to that. And that's one of the things that a model of what we're going to be called upon to look at. The whole AI question. The whole replacing human thought with some kind of semiconductor algorithmic machine thought. Man, we've got some things to talk about here beside the rising tide. So let's get talking. Let's get a real conversation going. That's what's going on in Gemini. It is a conversation among the bicameral mind, the mortal and the immortal, Castor and Pollux, chatting it up in their secret language. One last commentary about what's going on in the sign Cancer. This deserves more attention than I have given it, and I will find I'll find ways to do that. I'll find places and places and times to do that. But one of the most important influences, going back maybe about 20 years, is the presence of something called Cronos. And this is one of those magical planets without a body from the Uranian astrology system by, I think, Alfred Witte, a German astrologer. And it's one of the points that was kind of invented, and nobody really knows how this was invented, but the ephemeris equations exist, and the point can be plotted, and it exists only in mathematics. And in the minds of astrologers, and to some extent the books of astrologers, it has no body. But it stands for self-respect when it's in your own sign. It stands for giving yourself the respect that you deserve, which most people do not. And this does not mean pumping up your ego. It does not mean who has the biggest sports car. It doesn't mean a lot of things that we think it means to have self-respect. And it's somewhat sublime what it means to have self-respect. How exactly do you address that? How do you give that a real definition? But I'm suggesting very strongly that that's the thing that's going on. Another one is, I think the point is Hades. And this is about depth. This is about going to your very depths of understanding who you are. There's something similar coming from out of Capricorn, which is saying that if you want to understand your family history, you've got to go way past your great-grandparents to do that. That's an example of the kind of depth that's involved. That means physically visiting the old country and finding out what's going on there, and as best you can, what was going on there when the boat or train departed. There's two more things that enter Cancer this year. One is a centaur, and one is an object orbiting out beyond Pluto. The centaur is Esbolus. The word Esbolus means carbon dust. Carbon is what all life has in common. And so the theme of Esbolus is what all life has in common. And one of the things that all life has in common is the persistence to survive, the desire to live, the desire to survive, the ongoing quest for survival. There's very few creatures that just give in because they feel like it. They're like, I give up. Humans do this more than any, but most creatures are going to struggle to stay alive. We might want to ask why that is. We might want to ask why so many humans struggle to not give up. The other is chaos. Chaos is not chaos in the sense of pandemonium, but rather chaos in the sense of prime creation. The one of the two prime creation gods of Greek antiquity, before the Pantheon, before Zeus and all of them, I think it was Gaia and Chaos. And this is a massive infusion of creative potential, along with that which is being expressed in many other parts of your chart. Chaos and Esbolus are entering Cancer, and this is going to help you focus who you are in the terms of what is the most important to you. A lot of reprioritizing going on. Indicated in almost every single soul chart is this massive project of reprioritizing. Good time for it in the history of the world. All right, I hope this run-on sentence has been helpful in some way, shape, or form. Thank you for joining me. Thank you more than anything for your trust in opening yourself up to my ideas, which I know are not the run-of-the-mill astrological ideas, but why bother if they're not? And I'll see you over, hopefully, at one of the other signs. Signing off from the Astrology Chalet in Rosendale, New York. Lots of love. Bye for now.